Today I'm joined by former gang member William Leahy. He spent a lot of his early life doing crimes for a number of years. William's biggest crime was when he got in a gang fight and someone ended up getting killed. He spent a lot of time in prison because of this. William shares what it was like to be on the run and also what it was like to get busted. Please share this show with any of your friends that you think will enjoy this type of interview. Also, please be sure to subscribe to my channel for more interviews like this. William's got a great redemption story. He's really changed his life around, and in today's video, you'll find out his life story. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview with William Leahy. Good morning, William. How you doing, man?
Good morning, bro. How you feeling?
Good, man. Thank you for coming on my show, man. I appreciate it.
No worries, man. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, well, I've been looking forward to doing this interview, man. You got a really good redemption story, man. I mean, you've been through a lot. You went through a lot. You went to prison and all kinds of different stuff, man. But on top of that, you're out. You're doing good. You're, you know, away from all that criminal life. You know what I mean? So that's what I, you know, been really wanting to cover on my channel, man. Good redemption story. So I do appreciate you taking out the time coming on, man.
Yeah, of course, man. I like your message. I like that you're actually putting something out there to actually spin people's wheels and really make them think and, you know, try to see the root of what people's problems are, you know, instead of saying, looking at, hey, they're just the way they are because that's the way they are. But there's a true meaning behind the way they are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. There's always more to it. And you're a prime example, man. And it all started with your early childhood. And that's where I think we should, you know, segue into is what it was like growing up for you. Paint the picture and why you went down this criminal path.
So I was born in 85, you know, the beginning of the crack epidemic. My mother's an Irish, Scottish, redheaded, green-eyed, beautiful devil, if I say so myself. You know, those redheads got a temper. beautiful woman. My father was a merchant marine. They met each other when they were in their adolescence. They grew up on Flatbush and Church Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. That's where I'm originally from. You know, drugs were big back then. So my mother had a bad childhood as well. You know, that gets passed on, bro. So, you know, she had a lot of things that she was battling. She had some sexual molestation happened to her through a step family member. I believe it was her step uncle, her stepfather's brother. For whatever reason, she told my grandmother, and nobody believed her. They just swept it under the rug, and everything went back to normal. So, you know, that takes a play on the psyche, bro. Emotionally, you know, that's something hard to deal with. So she started messing with pills, you know, uppers, downers, stuff like that. Recently did a truth finder. Found out she was a registered nurse in Pennsylvania before she had me. She was working on Wall Street. She was doing pretty good for herself, you know. But, you know, those childhood things that are not taken care of or addressed or, you know, healed, it'll always come back and bite you in your ass and put you in a bad place. Unfortunately, she couldn't shake that. You know, went from pills to coke to crack. They ended up taking me away when I was like 2 or 3 years old. She was having parties in the house. My father's out to sea 10, 11 months out the year. So, you know, getting a check or a stipend and then doing whatever you want and having an addiction, man, that's like the perfect recipe for disaster. So things got bad quick. She left the stove on. I remember opening up the door for the fire department. Had to unlock the lock, smoke in the house, whatever. They took me and they brought me to a aunt, a step aunt. I guess the same people, right? So I'm there. I'm out of control. Running up and down the street, barefooted, climbing out of windows. I'm like 4 or 5 now. The lady that I was with was Aunt Lillian, another old Irish woman with the bottle cap, you know, glasses and the nice swoops and all that stuff. She lived in Brooklyn as well, but over there in Garrison Beach towards the end in the water. She couldn't control me, man. She was, dealing with a daughter that had a muscular dystrophy. So she had a lot of issues. She would get an ambulette going back and forth to appointments. So she was dealing with that and then dealing with me and then being an alcoholic, you know, another recipe for disaster. So when she couldn't control me, she would whoop me. She'd catch me or whatever, get a whooping. And I went to school. They saw the bruises. I wasn't really paying attention. I wasn't coloring in the lines, you know, how they want you to do. So they sent ACS. ACS came and they got me. It's funny how that happened, because the way they got me was so traumatic, man. I think this is the reason why I have an authority issue and I have a thing against, let's be real, the police, man, and the system in general. But the ACS worker came back then. They came with two officers. They never came by themselves. They, you know, it was a big thing back then. They were afraid of people not giving up the kid, or, you know, they needed to have some security with them. So they came in the old, this is 91, June of 91. They came in the old blue and white box police cars with an ACS worker. I just seen my mother that day for the first time, and I can't remember. She said she was going and she was coming back. In the midst of that, the ACS came and they took me, and I was crying. I'm like, my mom, I want my mom. The ACS lady just kept on telling me to shut up, man. I eventually cried myself to sleep in the back of that police car. They brought me to Light Street. Light Street was intake for ACS. It's a building somewhere on Canal and Light Street. You go there, you get processed, I guess, and then they find you a place to stay. Usually it takes within 24 hours. I was there for maybe 6 or 7 hours, give or take, and they sent me to a foster home. It was late. It's at nighttime. I got there, stressed out, crying, don't know what's going on. I cried myself to sleep again. But the lady that had the house, she had some of the older boys try to comfort me. When I got up, it was like, you ever seen that cartoon Recess, where they're out there and they're in the jungle gyms and they're playing, and it's a ton of kids. It's almost like a prison yard, okay, in a weird way. But it kind of felt like that. It was just a jungle gym in the middle of this dry dirt with like 15, 20 kids just running around, and it was crazy.
So, I mean, they did have you. I mean, it was when you got here at that point, everything was all right with the kids. I mean, they weren't picking on you.
I was so young, man. I was 5. I just didn't know what was going on. I was trying to understand what was going on, but I was just like, holy cow. Like, I've never been, you know, from where I was that I could remember to somewhere new with a bunch of people that I don't know. I just got pretty much kidnapped, right?
Yeah. I mean, really.
Yeah, took and then put somewhere else. And then, you know, the lady seen that I was out, it wasn't going to work. So they sent me to a home with, they had two kids of their own and a mother and a father. They worked, they were into, you know, the church and stuff. It was amazing, man. It was a beautiful place. I got my own bike, running and jumping ramps. They had dogs. It was a beautiful place, man. I felt at ease.
Completely different from, you know, what you grew up, you know.
Completely different. I felt the genuine love. It was like a very different atmosphere. Like the way they explain it is like, yeah, I just woke up from a bad dream and I'm in a good place. You know what I mean? I was there for like 2 weeks. My mother's second cousins, they put in and they got me out. They brought me to their home. I stayed with them for about 3 years. In the process, you know, the courts want the mother to do programs and this, that, and the third, and we'll eventually give you the kid back, right?
Right.
I'm settling in. I'm feeling it. They're great to me. They're firefighters, police officers, transit workers. Like, this is what they were doing. They had a real solidified kind of family orientation, right? So I had that normalcy in my life, and I seen what the normalcy is, right?
Right.
After the second year, we start going back and forth to court again. That shit is stressful, too. Because now you're like, yo, I'm not staying here. I'm going with my mom and my dad, but I don't know them. But I know that I want my mom and my dad. You know, you see everybody else, you don't know what they're about. You just know, I want my mom and my dad. You don't know the shit that's coming along with it.
Right.
So they put my mother into a program. She, you know, passed with flying colors, fake it to make it kind of situation. They end up getting me back, right? I go back with my mother and father. They buy a house in Toms River. Now, mind you, he's a merchant marine, so he's out 10, 11 months out the year.
Long time.
So
Not around much.
Not around much. He's doing his own weird kind of bid the way he does it, right? Because that's a bid in itself, too. You know, being at sea 10, 11 months out of the year is pretty hardcore.
You know, I was going to add in, I mean, before we continue, I was going to say, you know, I want to unpack a little bit of, you know, just growing up, you've seen the traumatic experiences and everything like that. And then you got to a point to where you got this normalcy, man. So, yeah, I would see for a very young kid, it's like, this is insane. This has got to be so, you know, mind boggling kind of thing. You know what I mean? To be around all that and, you know, how, you know, you grew up and been, you're just around that. And I know things are going to continue on as we go about more traumatic experiences and stuff. But I mean, it's just got to be a real, something that messes with your head as a kid, you know, stress and everything, you know, be going hopping around in different families and stuff. So
I've noticed, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead, man.
So I've noticed from a young child, man, I've had a high tolerance for a lot of things that people may not have a tolerance for. When it comes to like that, traumatic events that took place, now as I'm older, right, I'm dealing with it now. But then I was so, focused on what was next that I wasn't in the now.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it was like, I need something else to happen to take me away from what's happening. So that becomes kind of an addiction in a way. So
cycle, man.
Because it's like, all right, if it's not here, what's next? Something's got to, even if it's worse than this, it's going to make things, the monotony, disappear or change. And then I don't have to deal with that specific thing that's going on. I have something else to focus on.
Right. I mean, there's just always something never ending. You kind of left off as where you were in the court system and, you know, you were there for 2 years and you were, you know, going back and forth. So what?
So on the last year of the 3 years that I was there, she cheated the program. Everything went well. They came together as a two parent unit. They're really pro about that in a court, especially if they're going to give a child back to someone who has drug addiction, I guess. So they got me back. I left the people that are with, it was another rip of a Band-Aid because the way they did it was they really didn't like my parents. So instead of making this a transition of love and caringness, it was, yo, we're going to leave all your shit in the driveway. Come and get it.
Jeez,
I'm there with my mother and father. We're picking up my stuff and they don't want to come out. I'm just there. We're putting stuff in the U-Haul. Like it's weird because the whole 3 years I was there, it was a very different feel. This is a very different energy that I'm getting now. And I'm like, oh, y'all don't fuck with me no more, I guess. You know what I mean? I'm with my parents now. You know what I mean? And whatever they had going on, I felt it too. So we go to Toms River, New Jersey. We're living there. I'm in school for a little bit. My father has to go back out to sea. In doing so, my mother relapses. He comes back. He sees the small signs. She's trying to hide bottles and this and that and the third. He's got to go back out again. So whatever happened during that time, it's at a place where it can either get better or it can get a lot worse. It got a lot worse. She started having friends come from Brooklyn, come up there, they're partying. She's forging signatures and taking money out of my father's credit cards and all kinds of craziness, right? So it's a party. I'm talking about we're in hotels, there's this, that, I'm ordering food. And I'm on you, I'm like, I want to say 9 or 10, bro.
So really, really young.
So yeah.
Is this when you started to experience, like, you know, you having to do crimes, you know, just to,
not yet. So we get into a situation where my father calls the police to the hotel that me and my mother and her friends are staying at. He comes and gets me. The ACS worker that was already involved for the transition has been notified. So when he's notified, he comes, he says, hey, he has to go back with his mother. So they bring me from my father, who just got me from a hotel where I was with my mother and a bunch of friends and they were getting high. And I'm just running around a hotel, running the pool, ordering food, going ape shit, right? They take me and put her back. So I'm like, yo, this is who I depend on, because anybody else, you know, they ain't got no say so. we go back to Brooklyn. He doesn't press any charges, whatever the case may be. We get to a friend of the family's house. We end up going to a friend's house that she met through therapy. We're there for like 6 months in a trailer park in somewhere over by Tom's River. Can't remember the name or where it's at exactly, but I'm there. I'm going to school. Things are getting, you know, worse because the friends that she has are functioning alcoholics. So she's keeping up. She's trying to keep that, you know, that presentation of that she's not far gone. I guess mm-hmm. when she started getting too far gone or the alcohol started messing up the relationships that she had there, we went to Brooklyn. Went to a friend of the family's house, went back to Flatbush. Old man Murphy, old Irish guy. He was in the neighborhood from when the neighborhood was Irish and Scottish and, you know, that immigration wave. This point in time, this is 93, 94. Migration came and it's pretty much changed everything. It's all West Indian now. From any place you can imagine from the West Indies, they're there in Flatbush. So I get there. She kind of like commandeers his apartment, makes him sleep in the kitchen. It's a one bedroom. So she would feed him the alcohol and he'd stay inside of the kitchen and she'd take the room and there'd be parties there all day, all night. Plus she's getting child support from my father and whatever else she's doing. She's forging checks and, you know, in the streets. So I'm in the streets. She's getting high. I don't want to be in the house. It's a lot of smoke. It's a one bedroom. She already took this guy out, put him in the kitchen. He's sleeping on the kitchen floor in his own house. Damn. So I'm on the street with a whole bunch of kids that our mothers know each other. But they're all in the same kind of genre of drugs and lifestyle. So we click up and we just start running the streets, man, robbing and stealing and taking and whatever, man. It was to this point where every time we walked past a goddamn fruit stand, man, it felt like I was in Aladdin, bro. That was my shot. I swear to God, bro. That's what we were doing. We were going to stores, stealing clothes. I was wearing the same clothes every day, man. It got to a point where I started getting into the fashion. I was young, but, you know, I wanted to be up to date with what was going on. That's a big part of why I didn't go to school was because of the hunger situation and the clothes, right? How can I focus on something where my stomach is growling? And I got kids snapping on me about my clothes, right? So I stopped going, man. I dropped out of the fourth grade, man. Damn. I just stopped going. I'm in the street now. We're robbing, stealing. This is like a everyday thing. We're waiting at 3:30, man, on a junction in Flatbush for kids to get out of school so we can get them when they get off their bus, you know, the city bus. It was crazy, man. It was rough times, you know. I eventually ended up catching a charge. Well, I didn't catch it yet, but we ended up catching a robbery for a bike. We went down to Sheepshead Bay, Marine Park area in Brooklyn. And, you know, seeing this kid, he was a little bit older, 14, 15. He had a nice GT Harrow. Speared him right off the bike. When I speared him off the bike, my little crew, you know, they jumped in or whatever. But when I speared him, there was a boulder, big rock on this piece of lawn that I caught him on. And, his shoulder popped out, like out the skin. So one of my friends jump on a bike, take off. We run now. We're not even on a bike. It's just me and my other two friends. We run. We were going to some backyards and we chill on the roof. They end up catching the kid, my friend that took the bike and went off or whatever. We see him come back with the bike in the back of the police car. He's going back to the scene. We leave. Things are just bad. So I didn't see him again for years, but I knew things were going to be bad. So I ended up putting myself in a group home. This is where that ACS worker comes into play. You know, he does the transitioning. He was involved for quite some time. I called him. I said, "Yo, listen, I can't stay here, man. She's smoking crack. I ain't got no clothes. There's no food. And get my ass whooped for nothing." You know, the come downs on crack, man.
What's that like?
Oh, man. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, man. You don't know what's gonna happen, bro. I done been beat like I stole something in the street, man. So, I got tired of that shit. Plus, that was the last straw of the bike situation. So they take me back to Light Street, right? Back to Light Street. I'm there for about a month now. I'm older. So this is the part that I didn't see because I was so young the first time. So basically, it's just a room where it's a rec room. And then at night, they have a closet where they have the fold-up spring beds. So what happens is they clear everything out at night and they put up the spring beds and they have a girl side and a boy side, right? So mm-hmm. the boys, we stay here in the morning, we wrap all our stuff up, and then we go to like a school that's supposed to be over by Family Court on 161st. It was an ACS building where, you know, you would go in there, watch movies or whatever. And so they came and pick you up and bring you back to the facility. Did that for a little while, went through the group homes, going through the group homes for about a year and a half. Nothing to do with that charge. Nothing came up. I'm in an independent living group home when I get out of Light Street. I went to 3 or 4 of them. I'm the youngest one in the house. This is usually kids that are 16, 17, 18, about to age out or try to get a job or really do something with themselves. Why they put me there, I don't know. But there was a lot of things that I had to worry about that, you know, nobody else did. I was the youngest. I'm the only little white boy there, and I always got to fight. You know what I'm saying? I always got to get it in. I always got to prove my point. So any kind of focusing on any kind of rehabilitation or focus on my future, I wasn't focused on that. I was focused on, you know, the immediate, the time that I'm in right then and there. Mm-hmm. So they sent me to a residential because I'm getting into too much fights. It's too much. So they sent me to a campus, Edwin Gould Academy. I think it's run by the Jewish board now. But Edwin Gould Academy is in Spring Valley, New York. They sent me up there. I'm there for a little bit, a month. I run away. I go back to my mother's house. Now, mind you, I haven't seen her in about a year, almost a year now.
What was that like?
It's like I just saw her yesterday. A lot worse. You know, drugs take a toll on you, man, especially if you're going hard and fast. You're going nowhere, but you're going somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was just happy to see her. I'm like, you know, maybe I can make this work, or, you know, maybe I'm back at home. I felt a little bit of ease. So I go in the neighborhood. I say, what's up to everybody? I haven't been in a while. You know, I was basically running. I see the kid that I ended up catching a case with. Same thing. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to link up with you. I'll see you. And I go back to my mother's house and get some sleep. Bullshit you not, man. Police knock on the door. Doom, 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 doom. My mother goes and answers the door. And she's like, Billy's not here, Billy. And I'm already trying to climb out the fire escape. I got like half my clothes on, the shoes on, the fire escape. They eventually come in. Mm-hmm. They're like, yo, come on, man. I get dressed. They bring me down to a building downtown Brooklyn. It's late. It's got to be like 1 a.m. They bring me to the barge. The barge is the boat for the island. But back then in 98, 99... it was for the adolescents. They had the youth on the boat. So I was just talking to a friend of mine that I grew up with about the real traumatic experience that I've ever experienced inside of the prison system as a whole. I went through the barge. You know, you got to get strip searched. You got to get into, jail clothing. You take off your clothing.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I'm only like 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, this really man, hard. This is a CO. This is a Rikers Island CO that's just working on a barge that's just dealing with adolescents. Big black dude, right? Ball head.
Mm-hmm.
Does a strip search. Yo, he makes me, like, spread my cheeks, bro, and, like, make it wink, bro. Like, more than once, bro.
Yeah.
And that's this for a kid, like, he's like, no, that's not good enough. Let me see it again.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I've never been in a situation like that, so...
No.
And I'm quiet now. I'm like, oh shit. I done run the streets, rob shit, all kinds of this. But this right here was different. That right there is out of all the things that I've been through in the juvenile detention system and everything, that right there is the one that just sets me to a point of like that's where it started, man. The degrading, Like, you know, you're going through the system, a kid is going to figure it out. He's either going to become an insurance policy or he's going to benefit it somehow. It'll figure it out. But that right there, man, I don't know, man. It made me feel violated, bro, at a young age. And then I guess when nothing happened or it was just, you know, rites of passage or whatever you want to call it, that's when I just said, fuck it, man. Fuck it. I stood there for, I want to say about a week. They sent me to Crossroads. Crossroads is another juvenile detention center. Finally went to court. Edwin Gould Academy, the group home that I was in, decided to take me back on a conditional release. So that was a blessing. I go there for like another maybe, I want to say maybe another 6 months. I run away again. Go back to the neighborhood, right? This time I'm in a house where things are sticky, man. They got somebody that's, you know, saying that they can't live here. They're saying that they can. It's a spot, bro. It's like a fucking spot. So I'm like, oh, shit. Just grown men, grown women. It's crazy. I'm in there just popping my shit, making it seem like, yo, I just came from juvenile. I'm the shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm young, bro. I'm stupid. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get my little stripes up and shit. So,
oh, jeez, yeah.
The lady that owns the house calls the cops on the dudes that's already there. And, you know, they find a gun in the house. Fucking, they put the gun on me, bro, because I'm the youngest. And come to find out, the person that, you know, was in the house doing what they do, man, they already had, like, a special relationship with these officers, if you get what I'm saying. So,
paying them off.
So they threw that shit on me. I knew it wasn't mine, man. I ain't had the gun, you know what I mean? Just came out. I'm not even 24 hours out of the group home, bro. I just literally, no bullshit. The way we left, we went AWOL. We had to walk all the way to the George Washington Bridge from Spring Valley and then get over the bridge and then get on the train. Like, there's no way I could have had a gun, bro. So
No. They
take, same day, so they take me in. I go to court. They're like, I have a lawyer now. The lawyer sits down with me, right? Yo, bro, it's the same fucking lawyer that I had when I was 6 years old.
6 years old.
She's like, yo, you don't remember me? I'm like, nah. She's like, I remember you. I'm like, well, where do you know me from? She said, I was your lawyer when you were going through the situation with your mother and father and the people in Jersey.
Damn, man. See, I mean,
the look on her face, bro. Like, this is how I knew the system was fucked up. Like, at this age, like, the disappointment, and not in me, it wasn't towards me, but the disappointment in the system itself from this woman, yo, bro, it touched my heart, man. And it just like, oh, this is what this is. This is the game. This is the system. Oh, I see what you see, but I can't articulate it at that time. You know what I mean? I absorbed everything that she put out there because she was distraught about it. You know what I mean? She was like, yo, this is crazy. I just put you back with your parents and now you coming through all this. She looked through my file. She's like, yo, and she was really upset that, you know, that happened.
I was going to add in, like, it is, you know, how you said, I mean, it's like, you know, everything came full circle. I mean, she was representing you as a child, a young child, you know what I mean? Like trying to help you and help better your situation with your parents. But I mean, it just goes to show, I mean, being in that kind of environment, you know, I mean, this is 6 years later after you're like 12, 13, and now you're more into actually getting yourself in trouble. Now it's like, you know, it's not supposed to be like that. I mean, they're supposed to help you get to a good home so you can have a good life and stuff. But, you know, obviously it doesn't go like that. You know, some people may get lucky, but I mean, that wasn't in your case. I mean, that wasn't your situation, man. It's just, it sucks, you know, having to go through all that.
Yeah, whatever that doesn't come out in the wash definitely comes out the rinse, and they definitely keep that too. You know what I mean? They want it all. So the system, man, it is definitely it's definitely fucked up, bro. It's a perpetuating cycle, and they know it, and it's designed that way, bro. So good thing with this lady is, one, she already knew my case. She knew me from when I was younger, and I had to explain to her, yo, listen, the kid with the bike, man, I did that. You know, I take that. I did that. But this gun shit, man, I didn't have none of that. We go to trial, bro. I go to trial for the first time at 13 years old, bro.
Jeez.
We beat it. I beat it.
Damn. Beat
it. And the only reason why I beat it is because she took the time to actually, you know what I mean? Well, a kid's not going to lie. Say he just popped somebody's shoulder or whatever. And I explained to her everything that was happening. And I said, yo, listen, be honest with you. That I didn't do that. That's not mine. And she saw the sincerity in it, and you know, everything. And she really went above and beyond, bro, because she went in there, I had to get on the stand and all this and all that. And bro, she killed it, bro.
Yeah.
With the placement of where the gun supposedly was and where I was, and it just didn't go together. You know what I mean? So she definitely aced that. She put a nail in that coffin. But I had to do 9 months for the conditional release violation for the assault. Yeah. So they sent me up. I'm in Crossroads. From Crossroads, I go to Horizon. From Horizon, I go to Pyramid. Pyramid is a reception center for DFY, OCFS, Division for Youth. That's juvenile. Mm-hmm. That's when you get to the state. I stayed there for about a month and a half. They classify me and they put me in CAS Residential. I'm in CAS Residential. It's in a Rensselaer Rail. It's in the middle of nowhere. No gates, no nothing. You can run if you want to, but you're not going nowhere. They'll find you. Yeah. It'd be stupid. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I'm in that groove now. It's almost like a group home. It's going, but there's some funny things going on with residents or inmates and staff, favors for favors, and you know, the grooming bullshit. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not staying here. I'm getting the fuck out of here. I get into a fight, whatever the case may be. They make it more than what it is. I wild out even more. They put me in Tryon Residential. Tryon is the same place that Tyson was in. Now, these COs are different, man. They're up there from Johnstown up in Albany and, you know, the woods and all that. That's all they do, man. They're hunting and they're spitting snuff inside of bottles and they're popping shit. And this is what they do. Yeah, so, you know, me being who I am, you know, coming from Brooklyn, I have a different way of talking from these kids up there. And they're, you know, trying to figure me out. This particular time, before I get locked up, a few of my friends are, my neighborhood is like Muslim, but we're, you know, kids that I associate with are like the kids that are doing bad shit, but they're being taught by their parents about the Muslim faith and all that. It was something that always intrigued me, right? So when I get to Tryon, I see a Muslim brother that's working, the only black man in the jail. Found out he was Muslim, and I asked him for a Quran. I get the Quran. I'm bringing the Quran back to my house. I put it in my cell. It's shower time now. Big CO, redneck, trucker hat, flannel shirt, shorts on, socks pulled up with the boots on, spitting and all that. He asked me where I'm from. Now, he knew what it was. He lined me up. He asked me, what am I? Not where I was from. That was before. That's when they first met me. But he asked me, what are you? I said, Muslim. And as soon as, before the M could meet the M on Muslim, bro, he snatched me by one hand and picked me up and slammed me on the floor, bro, and knocked me out. My soap dish, my towels, my slippers is off. Everything's everywhere. I shake it off. I'm trying to get up and put my slippers on. He's like, yo, I ain't tell you to fucking move. Lay there. Everybody's on their cell watching this shit in the hallway. So I lay there. I get in the shower. I go back in my cell. I'm like, oh, all right. You know, I've been beat before. I've been getting beat since I was young. So, you know, it wasn't that crazy. The knockout part was crazy for me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something that was like, oh, you know, I've been jumped, beat, gangs and all that shit. So, that wasn't the part. You know what I mean? When I got out the shower, I got dressed. He asked me to come to the desk. I went to the desk. He brought me in a rec room and cuffed me and started fucking me up, man. Rubbing my face into the carpet, ankle locks and all kinds of shit. I'm like, yo, I don't know what to do, man. I make a complaint. I'm like, yo, listen, I need to go see the nurse. I got a big rug burn on my face. I get there. I'm like, yo, this is what happened. She's like, what cottage you in? Who did this? I said it. And I was a little hesitant, you know what I mean? Because I knew the retaliation could be there or it could not be there. But I'm like, yo, somebody's got to hear this shit and be like, yo, this is wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
She said, go back to your cottage.
Jeez, man. You're serious.
I'm like, yo, this dude just fucked me up. It cuffed me and all that. It fucking violated the shit out of me. How are you? Go back to your cottage. So I'm there for a few days. Things are really weird now because now it's like, I'm thinking, yo, they're going to try to kill me, bro. Like, they're going to try to off me. So I had some screws in my desk that were loose. Those are concrete blue screws, long ones. Took one of those, start sharpening. I said, yeah, I'm going to get the fuck out of here one way or another, man. On the next movement, I tried to run down on them, tried to get them, couldn't get them. Another staff saw me before. I guess I was so red-eyed that he saw the movements, and he took me and he slammed me on my face and knocked out my tooth. From there, they take me and they put me in a box. I'm in a box for like 3 days before I see the dentist. Then they take me and they put me in Harlem Valley. Harlem Valley is a maximum secure for adolescents, juveniles, the New York State Department of Juvenile Delinquents, or whatever you want to call it. Worst of the worst. You got kids in there for sexual deviance. You got kids in there for murder. You got kids in there for, you know, horrendous assaults and mutilations and shit like that. 9 to life, 4 to life. I'm only there. I came in 9 months, bro. I'm already on 2 years into this bid because I have nowhere to go because I keep on getting in trouble and I can't go back to my mother. The group home's not taking me, whatever the case may be.
Jeez.
So I'm in Harlem Valley now. I'm there, you know, fighting, doing it. It is what it is. I eventually ended up going back to court. They give me another extension for a year. That's the bad part about family court. They can keep on giving you an extension, a year extension until your 18th birthday. So I'm already in the mindset, yo, this is where the fuck I'm going to be, man. I'm stuck. You know what I mean? I'm stuck here, man. This is where it's at, bro. So, you know, I'm wilding out or whatever the case may be. I ended up, you know, befriending or getting liked by a therapist and another counselor. And they're like, yo, we know you can't get out of here. We're going to try to put in a packet for you to get to a another group home, but it would be a residential. Same thing like Elvin Gould Academy. They pushed for it. They ended up getting me out of there. I got out of there. I went to Hawthorne Cedar Knolls. I'm like 16 and a half now. Co-ed. I'm around girls. And it's good. I'm chilling or whatever the case may be. Funny things start going on with staff and things like that. And I said, you know what? I'm getting out of here. So I went AWOL. Went to a friend of mine's house that I was in a group home with. Staying there, hustling, you know, robbing and stealing and shit. I ended up catching a gun charge. For real this time. Ended up doing 8 months, a year on the island. As soon as I get to court, hey, listen, man. I don't even want to go to trial. I don't want to go to hearings. I want to take this year on the island, and let's get it done with. Take the year. I go, still in the adolescence. Get off the island, come out, same situation. I ain't got nowhere to go. You know, I'm networking off with dudes that I've been with in a group home or jail. That, you know, it's like a small, unstamped, kind of fraternity that we have, you know, all going through the same shit. So I'm there. I'm doing my robbing and stealing again. Same shit. Just so happens that the kid that I know that got me the room inside of this house was a kid that I was in a group home with prior. He's gang related. I'm gang related. We're in opposite gangs. So his gang is not failing me, but they're not fucking with me because of the strength of him. So I'm doing what I'm doing.
So you were in a gang. I mean, you got involved with the Crips, right?
Yeah, I was you know, Cripping hard, man. And
what age did you join?
Around 11.
Oh, so this was way, way, way even before we got this deep. So I mean, during that whole time, this whole prison and or not prison but jail, juvie, all that, you were affiliated with that.
Yeah, so. So immediately everybody knew me. Every time I came in, I'd be like, "Yo, what's up?" This is who I am. If you got a problem, we get it in or whatever. You know, that's how you do it in juvenile. So that's always something that's been following me since young.
Did you have to get jumped in or do?
Yeah. Stuff? So the Crippin' started in the street. My neighborhood is, predominantly Crip, Flatbush, Brooklyn. It's almost like, military kids, you know, depending on what branch the parents are in, it depends on what branch they'll be in. Flatbush, Brooklyn is Crips, so that's the branch that I went with. I'm pretty sure if it was somewhere else, I'd have been whatever it is that they had going on. It's just, we're trying to survive and we're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that was what was there. I mean,
I was there.
I mean, you usually don't think of because I mean, you got in really early, man. So, I mean, it wasn't like you were, some older guy. Usually, gangs, they recruit the kids, young as hell, because you can't, I mean, you can try to convince an adult to join a gang, and it ain't gonna, usually work, what I'm saying?
Unless he's high functioning and has some, mental disabilities. That's the only way that really happens when you're older. What I mean? It's more enticing as a child because it's like, yo, this is my family. These are the kids that I'm waking up every morning with to meet up with, and we're robbing and stealing to eat and fill our bellies. And the trauma bond is so serious. That it just makes you grow a lot quicker, a lot faster. But it makes a real bond of unity that it's hard to describe. I'm not trying to idolize this, but it definitely brings you to a place of acceptance, man. And I can see how for a young child, being in that kind of environment and not having anybody, where that can lead to,
Yeah, I mean, it's so tempting for someone like, someone like you in your situation. You were growing up, I mean, you didn't really have, your family and stuff around. I mean, your dad was out, your mom was, hooked on drugs and stuff. And I mean, you didn't really have that kind of bond that you were looking for, So you found it on the street, and that's, the gang that was there, and that was who you were involved with for many, many years, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm fortunate enough to have had, older dudes that, even though they were teaching us bad shit, it came in, it came with principles and some kind of morals. I know I'm pretty sure people are going to try to, debunk that, but, it definitely, it voids the gap and fills in the spaces that you're missing at the time. And if you're intelligent enough to see that later on, it was a blessing, not a blessing and a lesson, that's the way I try to look at all the things that I've been through, all the experiences that I've ever had. What is the positive situation out of all the things that could possibly take place from this negative?
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
I've been on that kind of mental since I've been young. I've always expected the worst and hoped for the best, right?
Can't be disappointed that way,
No, because even just a little bit, it's like, oh, shit, that's a lot more than what I expected, I mean?
No, that's true, man. Eventually you did get involved with that, the big case, where you were sentenced into prison and you got, you want to go into that one? I mean, that was the whole gang fight that broke out.
So that... that goes back to that house with the kid that I knew from the group home. He was involved with the Latin Kings, Latin King House in Staten Island. They had a unity thing going on. It was very admirable to see that, for me being Crip and just really having to like solo dolo it everywhere. It's always been me by myself. Like, I've always held me down. Like, I've never really had, we had the gang or whatever, but everywhere I've been, I've always, repped that with the proudness of I'm ready for anything. Like, it's not even really more about that. It's just something to give myself to stand up for, if you get what I'm saying. Right. So, that's always been my advantage. Being the, being Crip anywhere is like you're asking for it.
Yeah.
So I think that had a lot to do with the fact that I was always on the opposite side of everybody else, and I still claimed it and still repped it. And, it kind of led to a point of, yo, if that's what he's doing and he ain't got nobody behind him, then that's who the fuck he is.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend being Latin King, me being Crip, we had a trauma bond because we went through the same thing. He went through something similar growing up as a kid. All the kids in the group home have similar stories, right? So we can identify what it is that makes us who we are. It's an easy way to tell who's who and who's not, there's a lot of things that could be put in place to make it seem like somebody is who they are, but they're really not. And I learned it the hard way. I'll tell you that in a minute. So I'm at this house, I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm going back and forth to Brooklyn. I'm robbing, stealing, I got stolen cars. I'm just trying to figure it out, right? I'm playing Grand Theft Auto for real. you know, I'm in a house. I just came back. I'm smoking my little joint. I'm chilling. I'm good. You know, I'm like, yo, tomorrow's another day. Hopefully, it won't be as crazy. Or maybe, you know, I'm just thinking. Somebody comes in and says, yo, we're getting it in. One of the dudes that's, you know, from the house. I'm like, oh, shit. And he's like, yo, your man's up there, too. The kid that I know from the group home. Whether he was Latin King, blood, fucking purple or blue, I was still going regardless, right? I get up there. You know, it's about five of them. No, it's about 20 of them and five of us. I get up there. I'm assessing the situation. I see bats, bottles, sticks, chains, belts, all you name it, they had it. I guess some of these dudes that have been fighting on the side that I was fighting for got tired of fighting. They pulled out big knives and started stabbing shit. When the police saw that, you know, that's when they finally put their lights on. They're like, oh, this is serious. There's blood everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching this for 15 minutes. And I ain't do a goddamn thing. So, jeez. You know, it's entertaining to them. So when they finally see the guy get stabbed and he's bleeding out or whatever, that's when they come out. Once I see that, the lights come on and they saying freeze police and all that, I take off. I get on my mission shit from young. We climbing garages and roofs and, you know, it all came into where it needed to come into at that particular time. I was doing all that for a reason, right? So go in his backyard. I lay down on a garage roof. I'm there for about 45 minutes. In the process of me laying on this roof, like I'm in Splinter Cell, cops are, you hear the engines, bro. They're roaring and they're just going around the whole block. It's a very small block, right? So, woo, 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 woo. Hear somebody yelling, he's gonna bleed out. Hurry up, get the ambulance. I'm like, oh shit, it's over. You know, I'm there. I jump down, things die down a little bit. I go inside, I go in the back of this house, I chill under the porch of a deck for another 45 minutes. Things are getting quieter. Eventually, go in front of that house, take off my shirt and my shoes, smoke a cigarette, and just wait, seeing what's going on. I finally see this girl, maybe about my age, a little bit older. She's walking down a block. You know, I'm looking for a lifeline, man. I'm trying to get out of here. I'm trying to get away from this block. I don't know what they have, what they don't have, whatever the case may be. So I ask her, hey, can you walk me to the train tracks? And an abandoned train tracks that are down a block that would bring me directly to where I was living at the time. She looked at me like I was crazy, bro. And just kept
sure.
I'm like, oh man. Shit, man. So she gets about halfway down the block, right? I'm like, yeah, I gotta move. So I'm thinking in my head, movement is movement. You see one person, you see another, they're far from each other. It's not going to be, you know, you're not going to connect anything, what happened. It's just somebody's going. So I eventually get to where she stops at the block where I got to get on the gate to get to the train tracks. And I could see her telling whoever she was out in front of the building, like, yo, this dude, I don't know what's going on. I said, yo, my fault. I didn't mean to startle you. I just got to get out of here. I was trying to get out of here. I jumped up and I crawled on the train tracks, went to the house, and I was on a run for like 2 weeks. Now, mind you, this is a gang-affiliated house. They have, you know, big homies and, you know, little homies and people that listen. This is all new to me because I just do what the fuck I want. You know what I mean? So they're trying to talk to me and they're like, yo, you did a great job. We don't even know you. And you did that. And this dude, the big guy, he's doing too much, bro. And I'm just like, yeah, I've been through a lot, bro. And I've never had anybody kind of like, you know what I mean? Like jerk me off this good. You know what I mean? I'm just like, whoa, it's different. You know what I mean? So that kind of threw a red flag for me. I'm still trying to, you know, decipher everything that's going on, but he's too friendly for me. It was just too much. It was too much. It was just something threw me off. He's like, yo, listen, I know you do the robberies and all that. I got a spot where you can get some money and you can get some hammers and you can get up out of here. I'm like, all right, cool. Within that 2 weeks, he brings me on a dry run to this place where he was supposed to go down. So with that set, I'm thinking about how that's going to take place because I can't get off of Staten Island because, you know, the ferry, it was just a lot going on. And I needed money, so I needed to pull this off to have some cash to keep me stable until whatever happened next, you know. He pops up one day out the blue on a two-week mark. All right, you ready? Let's go. I'm not ready, bro. I'm not ready. I'm still like shaky about everybody in the house. I'm watching. I'm a little paranoid. You know, they just got, I had a shotgun and a vest that was placed two doors down in the house with one of the guys that got arrested. He ended up, like he said, his grandmother turned it in. I'm like, oh shit, I ain't got, it was just a lot going on. So when he brings me, puts me in the car, he rolls down the window, strike one. I roll the window back up. I'm like, yo, this is off. Something's off. You know what I mean? We're driving. We're halfway or a quarter away to where it is that we're supposed to be going. We stop at a light. But now, mind you, this dude doesn't talk a lot to these other guys. His, you know, the people that are beneath him. He lets it be known. He lets it known that they're beneath him. Why he took a liking to me and put me above them at such a early stage of meeting me definitely rubbed me the wrong way. So, you know, he's opening it up. He's talking, and he's talking bullshit. You know, I didn't take a shower today. My underarms stink like onions. Yo, bro, his hands never went down from the time he said his underarms smell like onions. Gang intelligence came on both sides of the cars. Hands are still up. And they pull him out of the car. They ask him for a license and registration. He says he doesn't have it. They put him on the back of the car. Now, mind you, I got all the shit from adolescence. I got the gun charge on my record. So, you know, they're doing their homework. They're like, yo, who the fuck is this kid? They asked me my name about five times. They searched me about five times. They throw me in the back of gang intelligence vehicle, right? They still got this guy in the back of the car. He's there just popping shit with them like they were fucking high school buddies or on a football team or something.
Yeah.
Homicide comes, still holding up traffic. The light is green. They're smoking a cigar. They talk to the dude. They're like, yeah, go ahead, big man. He jumped in that car as if he just caught a robbery, bro. So once he had no license registration, bro. They say, yeah, get out of here, big man. They bring me to the precinct. They charge me with murder in a second. I'm on an island now. I'm on an island. I ended up getting in contact with my codees through the buildings and stuff like that. 6 months in, the same kid that I went up there to help, him and this other kid are the same kid that's telling on us now.
How'd that make you feel?
Well, it honestly, bro, it kind of, in a way, it's like, damn, man. Dudes, and I've always heard stories, you know, be careful who your friends are and all that. That's where that shit clicked in the most. Old heads and the old people used to be like, yo, show me who your friends are, show me who you are. And I'm like, yo, this dude is telling, you know what I mean? Because his girlfriend is talking to another man, bro. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, and for you too, I mean, the whole, you know, to give to people a little bit more context is like you were involved with knocking this guy out and then someone else stabbed him. And that's
yes, why. I didn't get into that. So, you know, they've been fighting for 15 minutes. They're tired, whatever the case may be. When I get up there, things crack off again. So I'm fresh. I rock this dude. Bow. He drops. Once he drops, it's like piranhas on meat, man. That's when they started really going after him and they started poking him. Once he fell and he dropped and he started getting back up, they started poking him up. There was another dude after I hit him. I went to another dude, hit him. He dropped a rebar, picked up his rebar, and another guy was coming. He was getting up. He had stumbled or something. And I just cracked him in the face with the rebar on some, you know, just Happy Gilmore shit. And then I just kept it moving. That's when the police came. And that's when all that other stuff happened.
But that's, I don't like, oh, go ahead.
Now, sometimes I kind of like, I don't like mentioning that because at the end of the day, man, I don't, we all went up there knowing what could have happened, but, you know, it could have been a little bit more, you know, care in that, you know what I mean?
No, I understand. I just wanted to, you know, kind of give people a little background of why you were even, you know, even charged with this, you know, with five other co-defendants on a murder. I mean, you were a part of a gang fight, but, you know, that's all, you know, they would have, you know, kind of heard or understood. But, you know, just to give a little bit of background, but, you know, that's kind of all I wanted to, you know, touch on with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a big part of the story, too, man. And, I got to stop leaving that out. But, yeah. Definitely contributed to the, you know, actions that took place after. And, you know.
But, I mean, you ended up having to go to with trial and everything with this. And it, what
so,
was
So about a year and some change, we went to our first hearing. A lot of evidence missing, you know, stories are not corroborated with, other officers. And then the lead homicide came on and just started stumbling because of the fact that, you know, they did a lot of things that they weren't supposed to do. So the judge was like, hey, listen, man, we're beating a dead horse here. We're going to go back in chambers. We'll come back out. They did that. They came back out. Kind of worked out for all of us, man. My co-D that initially, you know, admitted and was on camera to, you know, stabbing this man. They offered him 13 and a half flat for manslaughter. They offered my other co-D 10 flat for assault in the first, and they offered 5 flat for me for assault in the second. But here's the trick to that. We weren't able to take any of those pleas unless he took that 13 and a half flat. And if he decided to go to trial, we all would have went to trial. So, me personally, man, I would have took the 13 and a half flat for him, because when I was originally going to court, my lawyer was telling me, hey, 18 to life is their offer. And I told him, hey, listen, man, give me 18 flat right now. I'll cop out right now. Right now. Give me 18. I'll be home when I'm 36, 37. You know, coming through the system, man, it wouldn't have been that hard. System's like a second home to me. I know that sounds fucked up,
but no, I mean, I see why you're just ready to take it. Cause I mean, it could have been life in prison. You know what I mean? Yeah, it could have won more.
But anything without an L on it, I'd have been okay with. Let me get that 18, 15, 14, 10. I'd have took it, whatever it was.
What ended up happening?
How much did you get? He 5 flat. So he ended up taking that 13 and a half flat. Which is a blessing. And then we ended up taking a 10 and a 5. And that was the end of that. Went up there. Now, mind you, I said I dropped out of school at fourth grade. So reading has always been a little bit stronger than math. Math has always been just physical money in front of me. I never really had the time to do. You know, when we catch robberies and all that, we figure out how to break it down between the two or three of us. You know, we're young. We're just trying to figure it out. That's the most math that I did, bro. So when I eventually got scored and tested coming up state and all that, my math level was a 2.4, second year, fourth month of second grade. So reading was pretty good. It was like, I want to say like maybe like a 5 or 6, maybe 5 or 6 grade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I came in here with the idea and the mindset of somebody lost their life. It'd be a goddamn shame if I came in here and kept on doing the same fucking thing over. I didn't get a second chance to fuck this up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So my mindset was, yo, what can I get out of this bid? How can this bid make me so much better and be the person that I need to be for just the future me, right? Just to be a better me. So I said, you know, I got to get my GED. I need to take some self-help programs. I've always been in the yard, hitting the bag and working out. That's always been my thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so much of that you could possibly do, right? So I buckled down. I studied in my cube, man. I did formulas and I made sure that I associated with everything that I liked in life, right? So back then I was into guns and bullets and this and that. And so I took the fractions and I put it into where, you know, we got a case of ammunition and there's 45 bucks on this pallet. And that's how I really got good with math. So I was really thinking about how to really obtain and hold on to these formulas and how I was going to use them, right? I always know I wanted to be in construction. So I used that with the geometry and all that. I went and got my GED. I passed. I was actually the valedictorian. I got my scores up in about a year and a half to a 10.0 on everything, bro. Yeah. So, you know.
So I was going to say, so this is kind of where you started to have that, you know, this change in your heart and your mind, you know, where you were ready to be done with this kind of lifestyle, you know, criminal gang, doing all kinds of stuff like that.
You know, it's easy to, you know, do all that craziness, man. Cause when you do it from young, man, it's just there, bro. It's something that you do, especially coming through the system.
Yeah.
You know, so the hard part, I wanted to make a challenge for me, right? And the hard part was, if I don't come in here and start using my brain, man, I'm just going to be back in this situation, if not worse, when I get out, right? Because I can go down some really dark places and you know, put myself in some really bad situations. So I said, you know what, I've already done that. Let me not do that again. And, you know, it was always, I want to be better, and I want to be the best that I can be. Because main thing is, you know, it would be disrespectful for that man to lose his life for me to be the same dumb kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was really different because it wasn't like you just robbed someone. I mean, you were part of being, you know, taking someone's life, I suppose, in a way, you know what I mean? And that's what happened. And so you were ready to, you know, make your life better and, you know, try to help other people out because you didn't want to just continue to do the same shit. I mean, you really saw, I mean, it could have been easy just to be a part of that, you know, criminal life afterwards. I mean, cause you would have had all this, you know, you would have more reputation, right? I mean, you could have continued building your name in that life, but you wanted to build it in a different legit way. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so you got out, and then I think 2019, from what your other interviews said, that was your last, you know, you got in trouble a little bit more after,
and so, then you got out. So, I came home. I ended up going to Apex. Apex is a welding school. I got my welding certificates and all that stuff. I got in the union, 731. I stood online. I waited out there for, you know, a day or so. And, you know, I ended up getting it. Out of 300 applications, only 30 were getting picked. And I was one of the 30. So another blessing, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I was doing that. When you're in the union, man, you know, other than robbing and stealing, you know, lump sums don't come easy, right? So when you're in the union and you start seeing that money where your check is about $2,000 every week, right? Mm-hmm. And you're moving around and you're trying to do things. I was trying to mess with the marijuana game and, you know, going back and forth to Cali and stuff like that. You know, you lose sometimes. And unfortunately, I lost on this particular package, and it was a big chunk of change, and I was down to maybe my last $10,000, and I started panic, started not working. I had an injury at work. I had messed up my neck. So, you know, I'm trying to let that heal, but money and funds are running low. You know what I mean? I went back to what I know, man. I ended up getting this kid for 15 pounds and about, 10 pounds and 15,000. Right. Didn't think he was going to tell, you know, he ended up telling, came about that, ended up catching a 1.5 to 3 on a grand larceny. So I ended up going upstate for a little bit of time in the process. You know, I had kids when I came home, 3 kids, with a woman that I was in a group home with. Let's see where this is going. And the mentality and the, I guess you could say, the maturity for her was still stuck in the system in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. She went down her own lifestyle. She started, you know, dancing, you know, and indulging in that kind of lifestyle. You know where that goes. You know, so for me coming home and getting in contact with her and then her being involved with that, when I started to see where this was going, I try to stop it, you know, try to break the relationship off. Unfortunately, fortunately and unfortunately at the same time, you know, she got pregnant. So, you know, I had to stick around, you know, coming up the way I came up, you know, I just got left out in the cold. So one of my main things was I'm not going to leave my child to be left the way I was left. So I'm in a relationship with a, you know, a woman that I grew up with in a group home. She has her own problems, her own mental health issues, trauma experiences, same as I, you know what I mean? I'm working on it every day, and she's pretty much trying to escape it every day. So when I saw that wasn't going to work, I tried to break it off, And then that's when she came up pregnant with my daughter, my oldest. Things started going down rapidly, not too quick, but we had another daughter. So I got two daughters now. It's not going the way it should. You know, she's into her mental health. She's still indulging in a lifestyle that I don't approve of, right? So I'm trying to get away. I'm trying to find a way to, you know, take my kids and get them away from this lifestyle, because it's almost like a copy of mine, in a sense, right? She ends up abusing them because we're not together any longer. I'm with my wife, who I'm with now. At that point in time, we were just, you know, seeing each other and seeing how things were going to work. You know, she started taking that out on my kids, man. So I had to get my kids and take them from her. But this is around the same time where I was low on funds, and I did that particular situation with the grand larceny, right? So I did that a month prior to me getting them, not knowing that I was going to get them because their mother was abusing them. So I did that crime and thought nothing of it. Didn't think I was going to get caught or anything. So when I got the kids from their mother, they were with me for about a month before the police knocked on my door. They took me in. I bailed out. So now I'm fighting this case, right? I got my kids in my custody because of the abuse through their mother. I'm looking at some sort of time because I just know that's what it is. My record and everything, I'm going to be doing some time. So I'm trying to find a place for my kids to go so they don't have to go back with their mother to keep on experiencing that kind of abuse, right? Unfortunately, you know, the courts are always going to give the kids back to their mother. You know, see my situation, right?
No.
Kids went back to their mother. I'm thinking maybe this will be the opportunity where she learned from and she's got a second chance. I don't think she's going to fuck this up. You know what I mean? So I turn myself in, I get sentenced. I'm maybe 90 days in on that 1.5 to 3, right? 2019, I turned myself in. January 21st, I believe it was. I want to say April 26th, bro. The kids got taken away from her. So I'm in the system doing my 1.5 to 3. Kids get taken away. They're in the system doing the foster care thing. I'm like, yo, me and my kids are doing bids right now, bro. This is like my fucking life story repeating itself. So, you know, I get out, on a 1.5 to 3, you're supposed to do like 2 years, 3 the most if you don't, you know, do the things that you're supposed to do. But they're letting a lot of people go now because of, you know, just they need the prisons empty because of the whole migrant situation. Didn't mean to go too crazy into that, but, you know, get political and all that. But they're letting everybody go. It's lifers, merits, work release, and all that. So I'm like, yo, there's an opportunity for me to make it home early to get this merit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying everything, bro. I'm doing extra everything. I'm writing the DEPA programs. You know, how can I get in this? I'm trying to get into NYU for the journalism course. I did a little bit of that, but I ended up going to the box. But yeah, I'm there. And, you know, I'm like, I'm going to make my merit. Fortunately, you know, me being who I am, I had to stick up for somebody who wasn't around and, you know, put my sense into what the fuck was going on. And ended up going to the yard to back up this kid that couldn't back up himself. And, you know, I ended up getting jumped. Nothing happened to me. I'm good with my hands, you know. But the fact that you know, now I got a tier 2, I got a ticket, I'm a fuck around losing my merit, my kids are in the system. I'm like, you only got 2 years before a permanency hearing and they put them up for adoption. So I'm like, yo, I got to get out of here before this 2 year mark, man. Fortunate enough for me, I ended up going to the box. I did like 25, almost 30 days with a 5-day suspension. Ended up going back to the same jail with the same kid, put me in the same house with the same dudes that jumped me. I'm just like, yo, this shit can't get any worse, bro. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. I'm just like, yo, it goes, it goes. It doesn't. good thing is I go for my merit. That tier two wasn't that bad. They kind of pushed it to the side. And I had a parole packet. I had my wife put everything together, contacted the ACS workers and everything like that, and put together something to put in front of them to let them know, you know, this is what happened, and I was out of trouble for this amount of time, all that stuff. And, you know, I think it's well-deserved for me to go out there and get my kids out of the situation they're in. They thought so, too. I got out May 6th of 2019. So 2018 is when I went in. January 2018. I came home 2019, May 6th. Immediately, as soon as I got out, man, I went to the Westchester Family Court, put in the petitions, and then I went to Department of Children and Family Services in White Plains, and I sat down with the coordinator for the White Plains office, and I let them know the situation, how I had custody of them before that I went in, I had to get back, and all this stuff. Started the visits immediately, did the overnights, did the weekend, and then they've been home with me ever since May 6th of 2020. So came home May 6th, 2019. Took a year to get them home, but I got them home on May 6th, the year to date of when I came home.
No, I mean, you were really determined to get them out, man, and you made it. I mean, you were supposed to be in there for, you know, maybe 3 years or maybe even a little bit over that time. But if you would have been in there for a little bit longer, you wouldn't have been able to get them. So your determination to get out and really want to make sure they had a home and didn't go through the same thing. Because, I mean, they did essentially for a little bit of kind of things that you did, but not as bad, you know, on what you went through. But, I mean, you got out and you were able to help them. You know, now it's been two, almost probably 3 years you had them and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean,
it's about three and a half. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, you got out. But, I mean, this was really all factoring into you changing your mindset. And this was your last time going in prison and getting in any kind of trouble as well. So, I mean, after with all that, I mean, now you're with you sharing your story and stuff. I mean, it's really impactful. I mean, what would you say is your reason for wanting to share your story?
One, I think that the system in itself needs to be exposed. And I think, you know, this is, I'm not the only story out there, bro. You know, I'm just somebody who's willing to tell it. But I've been in places with kids and there's men out there that have stories that are as worse or if not worse than mine, you know, and nobody listens, nobody cares. You know, my thing is just exposure, man, because, you know, this system is designed to put you in a predicament where you will be insured through the government for however many years they want you for. You know, a lot of people have will and choice, but you know, a lot of things predetermine where a person is going to head or go because of their environment. So if you keep the environment you know, fucked up and shitty, and you know, that's what you're going to get out of whatever you try to produce out of that environment. So my thing is just exposure, man. This awareness is key, and you know, The future is the children, man. That's my main message is we have to change the future by taking care of the children.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that's where it all starts with. That's where, you know, we all get our start. And I agree with you that the environment of where someone grows up does have a major, you know, it can really affect which way they're going to go, the likeliness. You know what I mean? Some people somehow you know, figure out ways how they get out of that without getting involved with that. But for them being in that kind of environment, the likeliness of them getting involved with crime and not having any kind of outside help is for sure going to, you know, factor into what they do in the future. So I agree with you on, you know, trying to get the message out there, exposure and all that. But, you know, I mean, what you know, you said it is important to tell the kids, you know, wanting to help the kids, you know what I mean? And what would you tell your younger self if you could, with all the knowledge that you got with, you know, now?
Honestly, I really don't think I could have told myself anything. I think that for the circumstances that I was met with, I did the best that I could. But it was a lack of, guidance. It was a lack of parental, caring. So, you know, a lot of things happened the way they did because nobody was really paying attention, bro. But back then, you know, crack was a big thing. They knew the aftermaths. That's why they made that, Bill Clinton made that Juvenile Imprison Act. I don't know if that's the correct way of saying it, but they knew that the children from the people that were indulging or influenced by crack, they knew they had to sweep up and mop up after behind that. And that's where we came in, you know. They had to find a place for us to go with no real strategy or any kind of solutions to come along with it. We're the ones that really pretty much ensured the prison system for the next 25, bro. And I think that that's something that's taking place now. A lot of people can't see it, but they're doing the same thing to the youth that they did to the crack epidemic youth. They're just doing it in a different way, in a form and fashion. It's hard for people to see because they haven't been through the first wave, right? But when I see what's going on now, man, I see that the ducks are in a row just for that, to ensure the prison system for the next 15 to 25 off the youth of today.
So, you know, how do you invest in yourself today?
The way I invest in myself today is by pretty much spending as much time as I can with my kids and giving them the life lessons they need, to be better. And just presence is everything, man. I'm just happy to be present in my children's life, because somewhere along the line, I'm hoping to break this generational curse. And I believe by doing what I'm doing now is definitely one foolproof way of doing that. So that's all it is. It's all about presence for me right now. That's the way I keep things calm and sane for me.
Yeah, I mean, presence is, you know, being active and being a, you know, going to the events and going to do all that stuff is important, man. And, you know, I mean, you were able to miss out on that for a little while you were locked up. And so I'm sure you greatly appreciate being free and, you know, never take that for granted. You know what I mean?
No, not at all. And another thing that I'm learning as I'm getting older, man, even though I wasn't allowed or I didn't have the opportunity to, you know, do childlike things when I was coming up, seeing my kids do it, gives a little piece back of what I was missing.
Yeah, I see. I understand that, man. I mean, it really makes you feel, I don't know, it kind of takes you back to your childhood and make you want to also, you know, give them the best one as you can, because, you know, that's not what you were given. You weren't having that, you know, mom and dad family time kind of thing, or going to the pumpkin patch, or, you know, having Christmas events, you know what I mean? Birthday parties. I mean, that's all important stuff, man. And, you know, to not have that as a kid, I mean, it, you know, makes you now appreciate, you know, giving them the most best, you know, experience that you can with that.
No, yeah, without a doubt, man. I'm just blessed and, you know, happy that I'm able to actually be here and do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, I mean, it could have went on, you know, you could have been still locked up in prison, man. You could have been, you know, got killed on the street or something, you know, but you're able for, you know, for a reason. You're here now to push this, you know, these messages and stuff you want to get out there now with the, I mean, they're all important, man, getting all that out and spending time with your family, man. So, you know, with that, I mean, I really appreciate you coming on and, you know, taking out the time to, you know, share your story, your redemption story, man. I really enjoyed it, man. And I mean, you got anything else you want to leave the people with, promote or anything like that?
I would have to say that, you know, we're living in hard times now. A lot of people don't know the history of how things transpired to where they are, you know, with, you know, just a lot of things that go on with the youth today, man. But my thing is, if you see a child that you know is maybe, you know, not having the best life or the, you know, best of circumstances, those little things count, man. You know, just a little bit of food or maybe a shirt or an outfit. You know, anytime anybody ever fed me, I know who they are, you know what I mean? From young, when I was hungry, you know, that's what sticks out to me the most. So, you know, the compassion part of it is what really matters the most, because everything after that will definitely fall into place. But it has to be introduced. A lot of people, I noticed when I was coming up, even now, you know, they see a kid that's dirty or going through something, they grab their kid and they go, or they're like, yo, don't mess with him. Somebody, you know, has to, you know, be willing to take up some kind of, you know, responsibility and maybe drop a few jewels or gems. And it'll go a long way, man, because a lot of the old timers and a lot of people that did that to me, man, it made me, a big part of it made me who I am today.
Yeah, I could see that, man. I mean, just because, I mean, if you continue to walk away and let that person struggle or be on their own, man, it's really gonna, I mean, there's no one to help them. There's no hope. But I mean, if you extend that that arm, you know what I mean, those jewels, those gems, you know, whatever you can help them with, you know what I mean, feed them, like you said, I mean, you don't forget that, you know what I mean, whether they realize it years down the road, like how you had to do in your situation, or, you know, they straight up, you know, maybe they change around the next week, but I mean, being in that environment, it's not, you know, likely that they're going to just up and change. I mean, they need, you know, constant consistency, you know, in that, within them, you know what I mean?
Well, not only with them, the big thing that, you know, for me was the food situation and the clothing situation, definitely made me, separate myself from anything that could have possibly put me in a position where I felt less than because of those situations. You know what I mean? There's a big sense of security, whether people believe it or not, man. Food and clothing, those are the key fundamental foundations to any flourishing or blossoming of a child, man. Because if a child is worried about food and clothing, man, I can tell you he's not worried about numbers or words or whatever it is that you're saying to him. You know?
Yeah, I can see that. No, absolutely, man. Well, you know, William, I appreciate you coming on, man, today and sharing your story. It was really good, man. And, you know, I appreciate you taking out the time, man.
Now, anytime, man. It's been a pleasure, man. I love what you're doing. And, you know, hopefully this message will get out to the people that need to hear it. And, you know, hopefully, you know, just one person, it'll affect one person to affect someone else, man. To pass it on is a real thing. And I believe firmly that, you know, it takes a little bit to change the whole world.
Yeah, it's got to start somewhere, man.
William's got one great redemption story. He is doing his best every day now to live a normal life. William is another reminder that anybody can change their life around if they really want to. I really like that he is helping at-risk criminals by sharing his life story. Please comment any key takeaways that you got from this interview. Please share this interview with anyone that you think will enjoy this type of interview. Also, please be sure to subscribe to my channel for more videos like this. Thank you again so much for watching, and of course, we'll see you on the next one.